Well, welcome everyone. Today is March 21st, 2017, and this is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee of General Government. And here we're today we're going to have a public hearing on SB 5536, Secretary of State. We're waiting on the co-chair to get in, but we're going to proceed. Senator Johnson, you have something to do?
I need to excuse myself momentarily. I have a university president skulking the hall, so I'm going to go out and just visit with him. But we're, for purposes of convening, I'm here, and I'll be right out in the hall.
Okay. I also want to note on the record that Senator DeBoer is excused, and he's out of, won't be here today as well. He's out on medical. So with that being said, well, let's start off with the staff.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members. My name is Steve Bender with the Legislative Fiscal Office. And today you are holding the first of three scheduled public hearings on the Secretary of State Budget Bill 5536. I wanted to mention a few things before Secretary Richardson comes forward. And that is, as always, your materials are posted in OLIS under today's meeting date. You may note that there are some things that are not there, but they're not there. There's a reason why things that aren't there aren't there, and that is that the Secretary of State, as an elected official, the governor doesn't really make a governor's recommended budget on this particular budget. So if you look at the materials in OLIS, you won't see a governor's recommended budget item. You will see a agency request budget. You also won't see a report from the CFO DAS officer on this particular budget. But we do have our LFO budget review there for you. There is also the presentation that the agency will be going through today and the following 2 days as well. The Secretary of State operates an agency that has four major programs in it that are really quite independent of each other. There is the Elections Division, the Audits Division, the Archives Division, and the Corporation Division. There's also a Central Administrative Services Division that provides support to all four of these programs, as well as to the Executive Office of the Secretary. I don't want to take up too much of the Secretary of State's time unless you have specific questions, but I did want to point out that for budget purposes, you can view Secretary of State's budget as being funded from three broad categories of fund sources. The budget does receive general fund. The general fund goes to support the Elections Division and also part of the Centralized Administrative Services Division. The second type of revenue source is a revenue source that, for budget purposes, we treat equivalently to the general fund, and that is the other funds received from corporate registration fees. This is a program that is administered by the Corporation Division. They will be up today, the first of three days. So you'll be getting a lot of information about this particular division. But these revenues, we look at them as general fund because all of the revenues that are collected from these mandatory registration fees that are not required to operate the operations of the agency are transferred to the general fund. So they become a fungible general fund revenue. The third source of revenues is everything else. And everything else consists primarily of assessments to state agencies, which fund the Audits Division and the most of the Archives Division. There are also other charges for specific services, but these are the main three funding sources for the agency. And today, you'll be focusing on the Corporation Division and the Archives Division primarily. The final thing I'd like to mention is, if you're looking at our particular item, the LFO budget review on page 4, we do like to put everything in the framework of what the co-chairs have directed in their existing resources budget framework. In that framework, the co-chairs included a 5.4% reduction from current service level. They, of course, did not identify that each agency in the administrative program area have exactly that same reduction. But if you were to apply that 5.4% reduction in the administration program area to this budget, that would be equivalent to a reduction from current service level of approximately 545,000 general fund, or of approximately 1.35 million combination of general fund and these corporate registration fee revenues that we budget along with general fund. So,
thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. And with that, thank you, Mr. Secretary. Your presentation is already done. No, kidding. It's going down.
Any questions?
welcome to the Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. And, sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here with you, sitting on this side of the dais. I'll tell you, it's a humbling experience to be your Secretary of State. It's like I've been elected to be the CEO of a four different corporation conglomerate, because the Elections Division doesn't have a whole lot to do with the archives, nor with the Audits Division, or with the Corporations Division. So it's like having four separate corporations that all have their own missions, their goals, their staff, their culture, and I have the opportunity to be the head of all of them. And so I'm learning a lot, and I would not be able to actually be able to do the job if it wasn't for the professionalism of those that are behind me and their staff that work with them. And so I am so grateful to be selected by the people to have this opportunity to serve in this capacity. I'd like to begin.
So, sir, before you begin, for the record, please state your name.
I've actually been on the other side of that. Okay, I'm Dennis Richardson, Oregon's Secretary of State.
Thank you.
Our work, as has kind of been outlined by Mr. Bender, is to be the chief elections officer, to be the head of the audits division, to be the first stop for Oregon businesses, and the keeper of our records, and to ensure that the public funds are being well spent. I've kind of listed some of the different aspects on these slides. One is, what's our vision? And it's to apply the experience and knowledge and abilities that we have to help provide and improve greater transparency, accountability, and integrity to this office. Our goal in that last part is to kind of help restore trust of the citizens who have become quite skeptical of state government and all government. And so to accomplish that, we've laid out what our mission is, and I don't want to read most of this, but I'd like to share these items because they kind of outline what we really stand for and what we're trying to accomplish. And so it's to serve the community, build relationships, and to focus on equity for all Oregonians, and to do so by upholding the constitutional responsibility we have, as well as our statutes that outline the responsibilities for the state, for the Secretary of State's office. We want to encourage voter participation and maintain access and ensure fair elections and restore greater confidence in the election process. I mean, the President of the United States has had complaints about potential hacking of systems, and so I wrote him a letter and I explained to him that you can't hack paper, and that Oregon's system is clear and above the fear that he's expressed about internet services dealing with elections, because and I've gone through some of the counties. I've actually went to Clackamas County, and I had the Clackamas County clerk lead me from, I said, when a ballot's received, where does it come in? And then what happens? And where does it go? And then how are they counted? And how do you verify signatures? She took me all the way through the whole system, and the internet is not involved until the very end, when all the tabulation is completed. They then will take up a special thumb drive upstairs, and that's the first time that our system in the county levels where we're tabulating ballots is actually, we actually transfer the information, and so the county clerk at that point transfers to the state elections division the tabulation results. And so it just was reassuring to me to see how it's being done every step of the way in an open and transparent manner. We have some suspicion that's existed about some of the people that are registered. Maybe they have a right to vote or no right to vote. And so we're doing all that we can in the months and years ahead to help ensure that there's trust in our system, that everyone who has the opportunity and eligibility to vote will be able to vote, and that we reach out, especially to populations that may not normally get the opportunity or may feel outside of the process, so that they will also be, you know, that all Oregonians who are eligible to vote get a chance to vote. We want to ensure that the taxpayers receive maximum value for their tax dollars, and that we do so while we're protecting the privacy of personal information. And so you'll see throughout the presentations in the next 3 days, the emphasis on security. We want to ensure that the Secretary of State's office and everything that we do online is secure, and then go beyond that. I've asked our audits team for every audit that we perform from now on to have a small part of it be to ensure the IT security, because we have, you know, Alex Pettit, and he's set forth as a CIO for the state what the risks are and how we're going to manage those. But it's up to, I believe, our audits division to help ensure that each agency and each program or department that we're auditing will actually be asking the right questions to ensure that they're doing the things that will help protect our security, the way that we have our passwords set up, encryption of documents and other areas, so that because it's not enough just to say, here's what we want to do, but we want to know what is actually being done. The security for our system is like a chain, and the weakest link is that agency or that program that doesn't provide the security that's necessary. Because once a hacker were to come into the system, then they could maneuver throughout the system, throughout the state. So I want to make sure that we have that kind of security, and I've got the backing of our IT services and the audits division to make sure that that happens. We want to build an economy that makes it easier to start businesses in Oregon and to do business in Oregon, and invite businesses that are outside of Oregon to come to set up their shops here and to hire Oregon job seekers, so that we can maximize our employment opportunities by helping our new businesses and our current businesses grow, prosper, and create family wage jobs. We want to preserve and promote accessibility to our public records for all Oregonians. And you'll hear from Mary Beth Herkert, the head, our head archivist, about a process we have for all of our administrative rules to be online, so you can actually search administrative rules by topic instead of by reading an index somewhere. And so it's about making more and more information accessible to the people that want to see it. And we're going to empower Oregonians by providing timely and accurate information about their government, connecting through outreach activities, and protecting whistleblowers. So these are that's the mission that we have, and our strategic goals. You'll be hearing from each of the divisions that Mr. Bender has referred to. Our audits division is going to be improving government programs and service. Elections, we want to show how we're actually going about restoring greater trust in our system. For instance, one of the first things that we did when I took over was I asked our division director for elections, Steve Trout, to make a list, find a list of all addresses where they're receiving more than 10 ballots. Just kind of like to see how things look. Well, there were 6,500 addresses that are receiving more than 10 ballots. Mm-hmm. So he's still going through them to determine what what these places are. But what he's finding is that most of them are either fraternities, sororities, or senior care facilities, and that those that are not in a place that it would look fairly normal, we'll kind of look into. Just make sure. We want to trust that everything is being done right, but we want to verify as well. So in addition to that, we have, you know, our archives I mentioned already, the Corporations Division. You're going to be hearing from Ruth Miles as well as Peter Thorkell Thurkill, who is the head of our corporations division. And you'll see that the small business advocacy department that we have established is expanding. And we found that she's actually helped over 1,000 businesses now that are having difficulty in dealing with the state, with the bureaucracy. They have a place to go, like an ombudsman for small businesses. And so we're expanding that not only to state government, but also local governments. So we have an opportunity for businesses that are having difficulties with local governments. They have a number to call, somebody in the government who really is here to help. You know, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. Well, she does that over the phone, and she has a great staff, and we're expanding that somewhat. We're cross-training telephone operators that are in the corporations division so that if she and her staff are busy when we have a business owner that's calling in, we don't want them left on hold for 45 minutes, and we don't want them having to leave messages. And so they'll have a person to talk to who will take basic information and let them know when they're going to get a call back, so that they can know that there's somebody that's watching out for them. I think that'll restore a greater trust in government, and it provides a real service. And then in our administration services, and we're going to continue our IT structure, our applications, we're going to bolster the security posture that I mentioned earlier. We're going to enhance the ability to deliver robust, user-friendly applications that meet the business needs of Oregon citizens, and do it in a way that's going to utilize technology to help protect their private information. Skipping over to the org chart, we have essentially 229 positions, assuming that everything goes through this session as we expect. I mean, there's several bills that are adding to the complexity of the work of the corporations divisions to do investigations and so forth. If those go forward, we're going to have money and staff to do that. We've actually come up with a way to maybe lessen the need for that additional expenditure while still providing for the protection that corporations need, and to ensure that we are not being utilized by those that would use our corporations for inappropriate purposes. And so Peter Thurkill could tell you more about that as we go. Notable accomplishments during the current biennium, which I can take no credit for, but I mentioned that the Office of Small Business Assistance has expanded, and they've handled their 1,000th case already. And we want to just let you know that we've implemented the motor voter system, and we've registered nearly 300,000 new voters for Oregon that cast ballots in the November 2016 election. Major challenges that we face: the IT support for our business divisions is always a challenge. We're never done with security, because those that seek to hack and get information, they're constantly looking for new ways to infiltrate. And so we take very seriously this challenge to stay one step ahead of them. If they want to hack someplace, they can go someplace else. We just don't want it to be Oregon. Also, we want to increase and expand the ability we have to serve businesses that contact our small business advocacy. We have a challenge with recruiting and retaining auditors for the audits division. I didn't realize before I came here what was really involved with the audits. I'm learning a lot. And I didn't realize that our Secretary of State's office is the main source of providing auditors for other government agencies around the state. Mm. But that is just a way of life, and so we want to make sure that the recruiting is thorough, it's effective, that our training is effective, and we want those that would like to stay in state government to have a reason to stay with the Secretary of State's office. So that's a major challenge, and then we want to make sure that we manage and maintain our elections information technology. In the last election, on election night, people had the ability to go onto our website and see graphs and information. It was very, very effective, and we want to make sure that we have the ability to continue with that. Going to a budget summary, you see that, you know, currently we have $72.5 million is the total all funds budget, of which just under $10 million is general funds. If these expanded responsibilities for the corporations division go through, that's going to require several more positions. So we don't know how this is all going to finally play out, a lot of it depends on which bills go through and which don't. But we're looking for $79.5 million, if I want to say billion, no, that's federal government, $1 million. And with the breakdown, and as we go through each of the divisions, you'll get a sense of, you know, what we're doing with the money that you're allocating to us. We certainly want to emphasize that all budgets are not equal, that all agencies are not equal, that cuts in our budget have a direct effect, and if that is going to take place, we want to make sure that it's clear what the consequences will be. If you cut in the corporations division, is it going to have an effect on the ability of businesses to come? On the audits division, our audits division will generate and save multiples of what it costs for that division. So if there's cuts, it comes at a cost at a constitutional agency such as ours. And so we want to justify the money that's allocated and to assure you that we will be, that I'm very concerned about how money is spent. I want it to be as efficient and as effective and as economical as possible as we fulfill our job and serve the people of the state. So with that, I would like to invite the head of our corporations division, Peter Threlkill, to come up, and he can begin the corporations division. And as he's coming up, are there any questions that you have for me?
Thank you, Senator, and good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today. Several years ago, the Audits Division, before your time, came out with an excellent audit of delinquent debt and uncollected revenues here in the state of Oregon. A former colleague of mine would describe that problem as constituting billions and billions of dollars.
Billions
of dollars. And inspired in part by that audit, we have been asking every agency and every budget that's come before us about the delinquent debt within their own purview. I know that that this is in the before you assume the office, but I'm seeing here that that the Secretary of State began 2016 with about $150,000 in delinquent debt, but that more than doubled by the end of the year to about $345,000. I didn't expect you to answer that for us right here today, but I thought since we were at the beginning of your presentation rather than the end, that I would frame that question and ask if before we conclude here in a couple of days, if you and your directors could get back to us with an outline of where that debt's coming from and how we can do a better job of collecting it.
Absolutely. I'll be prepared to deal with that tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions from the committee?
Okay, excellent. And our corporations division has a solution as well, and so you may even get it earlier than expected.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. If I know that things are busy, if you are welcome to stick around, or if you have to leave, then we understand.
Thank you. I thought that I would learn more by being here than any place else, so
okay.
I'm staying.
Thank you. Mr. Threlkill.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here for you before you today. My name is Peter Threlkill. I'm the Director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's office. The Corporation Division is where you come to start a business, become a notary, or file a lien on personal property. We provide information to support business when they're starting up and as they're growing and prospering. We try to ensure that registration processes are as fast, simple, and easy as possible. And we also help small business cut through red tape when they run into problems with state and local governments. As mentioned, we are funded entirely through user fees paid by businesses to conduct transactions with us. We will transfer almost $62 million to the general fund next biennium. Our budget request this time is a little higher, and as is our staffing, and that's due to three legislative proposals and packages that would transition the Corporation Division from a ministerial office into more of a regulatory office. As the Secretary mentioned, we think we may have come up with a better solution that would have a much lower cost, and if the legislature were to look at adopting some of those options, and without those packages, our budget would be about $9.7 million and 35 FTE as opposed to $11.6 million and 46 FTE. So we think that would trend us in the right direction, and is hopefully something you would like to consider. In the Corporation Division, our programs help you to know whom you're doing business with, that documents are authentic, and if an asset is pledged as collateral in a loan. As the first stop for business, we provide information to help you know government's requirements for starting and operating a business and for hiring employees. Our Office of Small Business Assistance helps to cut through government red tape. Some of our other business services that we have provide a wealth of information to support Oregon businesses. A number are listed here. I won't go through them each individually, but I will touch on a couple in the next slides. One of our goals is to increase awareness of and accessibility of these tools and services so that more Oregon businesses know about them and can take advantage and utilize them. I wanted to touch briefly on our Oregon Start a Business Guide. We collaborate with all the states' business agencies to produce the Start a Business Guide as a digital publication. Last session, at the request of Representative Smith, we worked with the Small Business Development Centers to create a special print version of the guide, and I'd be happy to provide copies of this to each of you. But we have made those available out to the Small Business Development Centers. They actually use this printed version as the textbook when they are conducting new entrepreneur classes. So when we did a number of years ago, we revised the guide. We knew that that's how the Small Business Development Centers were using it. We contacted them. We went down to Eugene and we worked with them to make sure that what we were producing really supported them and the businesses that they're trying to help get off the ground so that everybody can be successful. So we think this is a great example of partnership and cross-collaboration in government.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Immediately, I want to thank you for this. They have been absolutely phenomenal. And so, Mr. Secretary of State, whatever you do, keep this guy around because he knows what he's doing, and he's really good. And I want you to know the SBDCs and small business owners around Oregon greatly appreciate it. Colleagues, I'd share with any of you at any point in time as you work with your constituents and they're looking to start a small business or maybe you're touring a small business, that business guide is a tremendous resource. It is just A-plus what you've created, and it's a great tool to give to your constituents. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you for the compliment. I think that one of the things that we're hearing more and more, and maybe you are as well, is the concept of these silos in government. All the agencies that are off conducting their own mission. And I think really in our examples, when we've worked to work across silos to collaborate with other agencies, I think that's really where we can start to deliver the best value for our common business customer. When we talk to businesses, they don't really care that how government is organized. They have a problem and they need it solved, and a lot of times it works best when agencies come together and work to solve those common problems for the business community. So another tool in that we have is the license directory, and this current biennium we took the older version of the license directory was about 13 years old, and we modernized it, and we actually built it into our Business Express business portal. So it's the latest service offering there. It's if you haven't seen it, it's available at licenseinfo.oregon.gov, and it's a comprehensive directory of over 1,400 state and local government licenses, permits, and registrations, providing easy access to government requirements. We were recognized by the as a national award finalist by NASIO, that's the National Association of Chief Information Officers, last year, so we're proud of that achievement. We didn't win the overall award, but we were one of the few that that were recognized as a finalist. One of the things that I would add with the license directory, in a couple of months, we're starting up a project to take the Business Wizard tool that we currently have. It's also about 13 years old. It provides a lot of detailed information for businesses, and we're going to modernize that. Our plan is to make it so that when a business comes into the Business Wizard, they can start and finish in 90 seconds. If they need more information, they can drill down, spend a little bit more time, but the idea is to give them all the information they need to get started and to be successful in their business endeavor.
Representative?
Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Thurlcall. Always good to see you. The license directory seems like such a positive used when used in a positive sense. Talk to me for a moment about what protections there are for the alternative, and that is whether it's somebody who's looking to garner information they can use against my business in an illegal or inappropriate form, or more commonly, just to pick up phone numbers and addresses and email addresses so they can spam me with the day-to-day kind of stuff that wears small businesses down.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, Representative Gomberg. In the license directory, this is really just those requirements for government. So it is an online searchable database. The only emails and phone numbers that you would have there are to state and local government agencies. We do not have any contacts for legislators in that or for private businesses.
Thank you.
Next up, we have the Office of Small Business Assistance. We opened the office about 3 years ago to help small business cut through red tape by solving individual problems and identifying opportunities for systemic improvement. As the Secretary mentioned, our workload is up 141% from 2015, and we recently completed our 1,000th case helping small business. We just hired our second advocate, bringing the staff of the office up to three. And one of the things that we're looking forward to doing and we want to do is we want to use this office to measure and report on the size and scope of regulations in Oregon so that decision makers can have better and more access to make better and more informed decisions.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. One of the things that I've talked to Ruth Miles about, who I think is a rock star, is for those of us that are fanatical in our districts about constituent contacts, having a report out method so that you can tell individual legislators when this Office of Small Business Assistance is working a particularly complex case in our districts. I don't want to find out about it on the ground when I'm back home that, well, the Secretary of State's office is fixing this. What do you know about it? Nothing. I mean, so Ruth has readily agreed, and I think will be true to her promise to keep an eagle eye out for making sure that we're fully informed in our own districts.
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, that's something that we're very committed to continuing to do.
Senator Mann.
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I'm a big fan. I think you've got a rock star in your hands as well, and I've been pleased to carry legislation expanding the authority of the Assistance Center. And I was also pleased to hear a few minutes ago that you're taking steps to make sure as your call volume increases that you've got a place for those phone calls to go and that you're transferring them over to the Corporations Division. My question, Peter, is, the strength of the Small Business Assistance Office is in part its integrity, its separation from everybody else. Is there the potential that if somebody gets transferred to corporations that they'll end up submitting a report to somebody that they're actually reporting about? Is there the potential for conflict there?
Co-Chairs, Representative Gomberg, generally the office isn't taking complaints about the corporation division. There are a number of requests that come through. When businesses come to our website, they'll see a number of different options for how to get help, how to get service. So we do have calls that regularly come through the Office of Small Business Assistance that are really calls for how to file your articles of incorporation or how to fill out a document to do a merger, those sorts of things. Ruth and her team try as best they can to within their knowledge to help guide them through. Sometimes they have to transfer them back over. The staff and the approach that we've taken to having corporation staff augment our small business team is that we've provided them with an intake form so that they can listen and conduct an interview and basically get the information in. They're not working the cases because that takes really a little bit more training and in-depth analysis, a lot of network contacts that they just don't have. But that's where we invest in our advocates to have that. They do the intake, they pass those cases on to the advocates who then step up and do the work on those.
All right, good answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to ask Ruth Miles to come up and present on our 2016 annual report.
Mr. Chair, will she be able to get through the bouquets of roses that have been tossed in her path?
We've tossed a few of them.
For the record, I am a rock star. I couldn't resist. For the record, I'm Ruth Miles. I'm the small business advocate for Secretary of State. Thank you, Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the subcommittee. I appreciate the opportunity to just quickly go through our annual report with you. Peter asked that I keep it short and sweet, so I'm going to do that. You have in front of you a folded copy of this report, so feel free to crack the seals on that, and we'll just walk through that really briefly. You would have received, hand-delivered to your offices in February, a copy of this report that doesn't have the creases that the one you've got now has. Those that you have now are packaged and sealed for mailing so that we've got them ready to give to business owners, to business associations, to nonprofits throughout the state as we visit with them about their concerns about local and state government. So you already know what we do in the office. At least you have a good idea of it. But I want to give you a sense of what we've been doing. So I'm just going to kind of throw out my remarks and go straight to the report. If you look on this page of the report, you see there's a big giant donut graph. And that's meant to give you a high-level, instant view of the kinds of problems that businesses are bringing to our attention. And this donut graph shows you the activity over the 2016 case year. So we're looking back over the calendar year of 2016 and looking at all of the cases accomplished during that time. And you can see that licensing is a very big chunk of our work. It's, in fact, a growing chunk. So that figure in 2014 was 34%. It grew to 38% the next year. And then this past year, it was 44%. We think that the increase in the percentage and the number of licensing cases is kind of a twofold factor. Really, I think it has mostly to do with the fact that we have been assertively reaching out to small businesses and nonprofits across the state, those that we serve, to say, we have this service available for you, and please call us if you have a problem or a question that you can't solve through normal means. And so we're getting to the point where more businesses are simply aware of the service. I don't think, we're not seeing that licensing is more complicated now than it has ever been before. So I don't think that that's the increase in percentage or in the number of cases. But you can see if you look just to the lower right-hand corner of that donut graph, how many cases we're talking about. Peter mentioned several times that we've done our 1,000th case. We did that actually just about the day we released this report and brought it to your offices. So we're now, I don't know, 1,020 or something like that, maybe 1,040. But this shows you, that little bar graph shows you our work over the years since the inception of the office. In 2014, it was just me in the office. In 2015, it was me and a new assistant learning the ropes for the very first time. Last year, it was me and that same assistant who was at full speed. So you can see we really put the pedal to the metal and tried to provide real value for the investment that you've made and real value for the businesses and the nonprofits that we serve. You can see over to the right of the donut graph, there's a panel that shows some key challenges that we're tracking over the years. And there's three-year data there for you to just give you a high-level understanding of these three areas of real concern, the first one being licensing, the second one being taxes, and the third being procurement, when government is purchasing goods and services from the private sector. The tax bracket, I just want to let you know that most of the cases that we're receiving, especially over the 2016 case year, are taxes having to, or questions about taxes having to do with withholding. So it's specifically employers that are calling us, and they either have an issue with employment or revenue, and sometimes both. So that's what those are. flipping the report over to the other side.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Let me ask you a question on that. Are these entrepreneurs calling up with a genuine interest for help, or are they trying to position you versus another agency?
That does happen occasionally.
You get what I'm asking on that?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Thank you for the question, Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith. Yes, that does occasionally happen, but it is so rare that I could probably count on one hand the number of times that's happened in the whole history of the office. It's very unusual for a business owner or a nonprofit to try and do that. It's more common that they have a question that they simply haven't been able to get a person to answer, particularly when it comes to taxes. We often hear a complaint that people can't find their way through a voicemail tree to a person with the Department of Revenue specifically. With the Department of Employment, it tends to be questions about the language that is in notices that are sent to employers and whether or not that's understandable by those employers.
Committee, I want you to just this moment right now, because we're going to have this conversation in a few weeks with a different agency. Thank you. Please keep going. But just
of course.
Mark this comment.
Yes, and we are working actively with revenue specifically on one issue that's come up more recently. We've had a rash of calls from folks that are solopreneurs. They're not employers. They have no employees, never have had employees, but they've gotten a BIN number, a state payroll tax number. And through some series of events, and we haven't yet figured out what in revenue systems is causing this, but those folks are getting notices saying you owe us not only withholding reports, but a check for withholding when they have no employees. There's no withholding going on. And then the next notice that comes is the Department of Revenue saying, here's your historical return. You now owe this much money, or you need to give us correct information. So we think that it has to do with a systems change that happened at Revenue, but we've just got to work down to where that has happened. But we're working actively with them and with employment on that issue.
Has this something that has just occurred, or has this been going on over time?
Thank you for the question, Co-Chair Manning. That particular problem has really reared its head over the past month and a half, maybe 2 months. So just at the very end of the 2016 case year and into this year, I'm starting to see a decrease in the number of calls that we're getting on that. But even the revenue department has noticed that, because we're constantly calling the same people, our key contacts in that agency, to say, Got another one. Can you help them? And so on a case-by-case basis, we're resolving these. But they're aware that there's a systemic issue in their agency. So we're working with them to see if we can find it.
Just curious, what when you notify them that you're experiencing this recurring issue, what type of response are they giving?
They actually notified me.
Oh, they notified you.
Right. So we have cases across industry sectors and across regulatory silos that we're working on every day. Right now, we have almost 50 cases on the docket for the whole office right now. Only a few of those have to do with taxes. And so they noticed it before I did, that we were calling them with the same question over and over again. And so it's to their credit that they're aware and ready to look for something to change so that this doesn't happen to other folks that are not employers that are being treated like them.
Thank you.
So I'll make this really quick then. If you flip the...
Mr. Chair, you do raise an important issue, though, and I think it's one that maybe would bear from a little more conversation. Whether or not agencies where you're suggesting corrective action and you have a backlog of constituent complaints to prove that there's an issue, whether or not they're willing to accept that criticism and do something about it. Do you have a court of last resort? You can't be a lion tamer without a whip and a chair. Where's your whip and your chair?
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, really, I guess the court of last resort would be you as legislators. We have a basket of tools that we can use to work with agencies. Those collaborative relationships are foundational to everything that we do. So my key contacts at Department of Revenue and at Employment Department are established relationships that I've worked very hard to sort of enhance over the years, so that when I do have to have a critical conversation, that it's more likely to be heard and received and acted on within the resource constraints that those agencies may have.
Follow-up? I hope you would not feel constrained that if there were not remedial action taken in the face of, say, 50 constituent contacts, that you would find a place at the legislature to bring that information forward. I know that ratting out your key contacts is not a good way to maintain healthy relationships. Conversely, if they won't respond to mitigate or remediate, you've got to feel as though there's a path to this building to say, gee, this looks like a systemic problem and we could use some legislation or something to help fix it.
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, I agree, and it's good to know that you're receptive for that. And certainly I'll work with Secretary Richardson and his team to make sure that, you know, any of those sorts of circumstances that we bring to your attention.
Thank you.
If I may, quickly, the other side of the report bifurcates that 528 case number that you see on the donut graph on the other side. And so you'll see that we've got a 374 and 154. In February 2016, our office was expanded through a bill introduced by Governor Brown. It accomplished three key things, but one of those things really made a difference in our back-end data collection and reporting to you. And that was the ability to work with startups for the very first time. Our job in this circumstance is to make sure that folks who are just getting started are even growing into a new area, maybe becoming an employer for the first time or exporting for the first time, or those folks who are winding up their operations for good, with that those folks get their regulatory questions answered and that we refer them to one of our key partners in the community who can help them with technical assistance. Those are often small business development centers. In fact, almost always they're small business development centers, especially for our rural area businesses because of the coverage that the network has across the state. It also, in the Portland area, includes a whole host of nonprofit capital partners and other technical assistance partners who can help with everything from starting a business to an IDA program, micro lenders, you name it. There's a whole group of those folks, and you can see some metrics on who those partners are and what the importance of those relationships are to our office, because we can't do the work of the office without having those strategic relationships in place.
And just so, really quick, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yep. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank you for that. On numerous occasions in LeGrand, your office has referred small businesses to the EOU SBDC, and that collaboration works just really, really well. So I hope you'll continue that.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, thank you. Absolutely. It's our pleasure to be able to do that.
It works well.
Yeah. That's all I have, unless you have other questions for me.
No, just one little comment for myself. You know, I have a nonprofit, and when I've had questions, I reached out to your agency and, you know, actually get a chance to talk to people and get stuff resolved. And so that's a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Moving on to our business registration program. Our focus is to make it as simple and easy as possible to start a business in Oregon, as that leads to greater entrepreneurship and company productivity. But we also want to see existing companies get the support that they need to grow. So that's a lot of what our programs and our services and our approach to working with business is about. The business registry also, our program also generates almost $62 million for the general fund. Just thought I'd throw that back out there one more time. We also have our Oregon Central Business Registry. This is our online filing program that helps to cut across agency silos. We've partnered with the Departments of Revenue, Employment, Consumer and Business Services, as well as Construction Contractors Board and the City of Portland to make registration fast, simple, and easy. To date, we've processed over 1 million businesses through this online system. It helps the businesses complete the registration process in a matter of minutes rather than days and weeks. This slide just shows the growth of adoption of online filing over the last few years. We continue to increase. Currently, we're at 61% of all business registry filings with the Secretary of State are done and conducted online, and we have plans to continue to add more services and more options so that we can capture even more of that market. The thing that we hear from our customers is they don't have time to stand in line, to wait around for the government to do something or process their paperwork. This is an option that allows them to get it done today. and get it done right now. So we think that that's a very important investment that you as legislators have made over the years, and we want to continue that good work. Our notary program, Notary Publics. Notaries help to make sure that documents are authentic, that signers and that signers do so willingly. We train and commission the state's notaries to provide, and we provide free online computer-based training as well as in-person training in communities throughout the state. We recently, this biennium, developed an advanced notary training for notaries that were looking for more than just the basics to help them be better at the notary functions. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about our Uniform Commercial Code program. And UCC filings allow businesses and farmers to use personal property and commodities as collateral to obtain loans and credit. Creditors are able to secure debt and establish priority of claim as a secured creditor in the event of a bankruptcy. It also provides governments with an effective way to collect unpaid tax debts. And I think this goes back to the point that was made earlier. So last year, we implemented Senate Bill 161 to create a county warrants program. Previously, the county tax assessors had to record their liens with the county recorder's office. They could not record with the Secretary of State, even though they told us that that was a goal, that's something they'd wanted to do for years. The county tax assessors would have conversations with people that were purchasing property that had liens, and they'd ask, well, why didn't you check with us? And the people would say, well, we checked with the UCC at the Secretary of State. And so under Senate Bill 161, we were able to create a way that the counties could file those liens with our UCC system. It's the place that people search to find liens and tax liens. To date, the counties have filed over 3,300 county warrants for a value of over $11 million in unpaid business personal property tax debt. One of the other things that it allows is businesses that are considering purchasing that property now have a place that they can go to see if there's a tax lien and understand that and be informed to buyers before the sale closes.
Is this service fully centralized, or are there other agencies that are also taking lien information? I'm specifically thinking about the Construction Contractors Board and liens for faulty performance of services.
Co-Chair Smith and Manning, Senator Johnson, the UCC is a statewide system. That's our office, but specifically to your point, the Construction Contractors Board does not have the authority to file a lien in our system. That would take a statutory change.
Okay. So I guess the point that I'm asking inartfully is your site the only site a party would need to search in order to be guaranteed that there were no active liens? UCC liens.
We would believe that would be the best place. Each of the counties, you can record at each of the counties, but then a searcher has to go search at each of the 36 counties, where with us, they search one place. Just to finish on the county warrants, in the last year, counties have released $2.5 million in liens, meaning that they have collected $2.5 million through this system. So that's money that goes into the county coffers to help fund their programs.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And Senator, to add to this conversation, our little business probably handles 250 to 300 transactions with the corporate division as it relates to the UCC program, and it's a plus. These folks just do a phenomenal job, and so congratulations, Mr. Secretary of State. I think if you brought in the Oregon Bankers Association or the credit union folks or any of those financing entities out there that utilize this service, I think all of them would throw bouquets. It's really, really well done. The one thing I do want to ask, though, Mr. Co-Chair, is I wonder if there's a a place for a conversation with the corporate division and Representative Gomberg and his desire to collect delinquent accounts. And I wonder if there's a way for us to begin to figure out how those who owe the state of Oregon but are not having liens placed out there, is there a way to create a mechanism where we're bringing the two of you together on this? At some point in time, I think we ought to have a broader conversation. This isn't probably the place, but I think if there's ever an entity that could help us get where we want to be, you folks would be the place to help us.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, that's actually the next thing that I wanted to mention. Just a couple of months ago, we worked with the Department of Revenue. They have their new Gentax system that is working really well. About a year ago, we recognized that they had really increased the number of revenue warrants that they're able to file with us, and we were getting about 1,500 filings a month. It was actually on track to exceed the number of UCC filings. I had to hire a temporary worker to keep up with the pace of the filing volume. We got together as agencies and we said, so let's figure out a way to automate this system. We implemented that in November. And so revenue is just in the process of getting that started up. But the potential is that they can take their system and program it so that if a taxpayer is more than 6 months behind on a tax obligation and say owes more than $2,500, their system will automatically file that tax lien with our system. So that's
huge. I'm not meaning to interrupt you. That's huge for the state of Oregon.
So then it creates a public notice of the debt.
That's right.
For that lien and gives the Department of Revenue a much greater tool at low to no cost to be able to. So we've removed the labor component of that, of being able to file those liens, and we're just waiting for revenue, probably when they get through the tax season, to really ramp that up. And we'll start to see, I think, a lot more liens come through. I think that it really has the potential to be one of the best solutions to solve that delinquent tax problem. And the last I heard, it was somewhere north of $3 billion.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you to the other co-chair for initiating this conversation. Yeah, I would say brace yourself. The folks at Revenue have 113,000 accounts that they're looking at, but as we move out of simply the delinquent income taxes and move into other debts to the state of Oregon, which may well all soon be located in the Department of Revenue based on the progress of Senate Bill 89, we're talking about north of 2 million accounts, and yeah, $3.3 billion.
Co-Chairs Manning and Smith, Representative Gomberg, as long as Department of Revenue has the statutory authority to file revenue warrants with our office, they would be able to send those over, put them in our system, and then one of the nice things about that is the banks look at our system before they make loans. The credit bureaus pick that up. It goes on credit files, and it really leverages the network of systems that are out there to make sure that the state is in the best position to collect the money that it's due to.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment a little bit further. I mean, what Mr. Threlkeld has outlined is a pathway to address one of the more frustrating aspects of all this, that delinquent debt to the state of Oregon doesn't affect your credit rating because it's not consumer debt. So I don't pay my Nordstrom's bill, and it affects my credit rating, but I don't pay my taxes, and there's no consequence that shows up when I'm looking for a loan or trying to secure credit someplace else. The lien process is a pathway towards addressing that inadequacy in our current situation.
This chart just talks about UCC online filing. We've kind of plateaued a little bit. We think that the increase that hopefully we'll see from the Department of Revenue is really going to drive these numbers up. One of the other things that we're looking to do, that we plan to do in the next biennium, is develop a business-to-business filing process with large secured parties, could be some of the large banks, John Deere, other service companies that handle filings for their clients. And we want to make sure that we've built out the best system for those folks that are our high volume filers so that they'll use our system. We just want to continue to drive more transactions online because it's more efficient for us and it's faster for our customers.
Really quick, Mr.
Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Isn't this subject a little bit to the economy? Because the reason someone's filing a UCC is because they want to secure a transaction or they want to update a transaction. And so, I mean, you folks are going to be able to reach out, but to some extent, the economy is what the economy is, and that's going to dictate a little bit of this, isn't it?
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. If banks are not lending money,
right,
then there's not a lot of a need. They're not financing. They're not securing collateral.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
So I just wanted to speak a little bit. We've used very successfully technology to move more of our processes and services and information online. It helps us contain costs and improve our program delivery. One of the things, our search engines are a very popular option. And in our UCC search engine and our business registry search engine, we make sure that the public record documents, those filings that people have filed with us, those are scanned in as images, and they're available to businesses online for free so that they can download and they can actually see, if you wanted to look at Nike's amended articles of incorporation from last year, you could see that. You just go to the website, search for them, click on the link, and you have that. A little bit about our performance measures. Here, lower numbers are better. It means that we do our work faster with fewer delays for our customers. Our current result for business registry is 0.6 days. So we're just a little over a half a day. What we do is we average, we take all the transactions that come in, we create an average based on how fast they get worked, and we come up with the result here. I think it's important to note that the World Bank benchmarks countries on the time it takes to register a business in all countries that are all around the world. And if Oregon were a country, we would rank number 2 in the world for the fastest place to do business, right behind New Zealand. So they're just a little bit better than we are. So we still have a goal.
They're down under, too, so.
They start 12 hours ahead of us.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So they had a head start. I like that explanation. Yeah. When we look at notary, again, lower numbers are better. They're faster. That's weird. Actually, over the last 2 years, because notary is such a small program, when the filings come in, we just file them. So we're doing them same day. Notary's actually coming up with an average of 0 days. The same is true for UCC. Again, it's a little bit of a smaller program, and especially helps that we've moved some of those bigger filers, or we're trying to move some of the bigger filers online. Notary, we actually have a statutory requirement to file within 2 days, so we've always been sensitive to that. We're actually filing same day with, I think I said notary, but with UCC. For a lot of the secured parties, they consider it a race to the courthouse because they want to get their filing in before somebody else that might have a similar filing on that debtor, because it's that priority of filing that determines who's going to get paid in the event of a bankruptcy. So,
can I? Yeah, we're just throwing bouquets here, so we got to keep this going. I think it's just absolutely awesome that you folks are taking your Notary Public program out to the public. As a matter of fact, today you folks are in LeGrand doing a training, and that's what the Secretary of State's office should be doing. And so I compliment you folks on this. It's great, and the public appreciates it. So thank you.
Thank you.
I was just noticing an ad that came by that just showed me you guys are in LeGrand, and so I think that's awesome. Thank you.
Okay. On our customer service key performance measure, We're currently exceeding all targets. We're above the goal of 85%. I will note that in 2015, we did not get a survey sent out, so we don't have results for that year. When Secretary Richardson came in, one of the first things he asked me to do was conduct a business friendliness survey. So this is something that's brand new that we just did in the last couple of months. And actually, at the first part of March, our survey closed. This is just one data point out of that survey. We went through our business registry system. We had 362,000 emails, and we sent out an invite to all of those folks and asked them to provide us feedback on roughly about 10 questions that would take about 5 minutes of their time. We've received 5,000 responses, and our staff is busy crunching the numbers and trying to categorize things and make sense so that we'll be able to have information that we can share and really have a good understanding of what the business community wants from us and from the state of Oregon. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about here, just one of the questions we asked, what was the biggest roadblock to starting your business? And participants could select from one of the eight categories. And I just wanted to single out the top concern at 44% was understanding how to start a business. So this really comes back to a lot of the programs that I've talked to you about today. You know, we want to make sure that we're using this information so that we can come up with better ways to market our information and our services. If people don't know about them, it doesn't do them any good. We want to make sure that we're getting out in front of them and creating awareness so that they know and they can use these tools. Or if they call us, we can guide and direct them either to those tools or answer their questions about how to start their business and, you know, get started on the right foot and do the right thing. So in budget drivers, the secretary spoke earlier about security of our computer system. This is really one of our top concerns. It's now embedded in just about everything that we do. Whenever we roll out a new application, one of the things that's required is we do penetration testing, or Chris Mullen, our CIO, his group does that for us. But what we're finding is that more and more the security and the efforts to maintain security, it just consumes more and more of our staff and our developer resources. But it's a commitment that we have to make. Our customers and our agency is so dependent on our computer systems that we have to make sure that they're secure, they're operational and available at all times. If they were to go down, we just cannot operate in a paper world. We couldn't hire enough staff these days to handle the volumes, right, and do the work that we're able to do with the computer systems. And I don't think the public would tolerate it, even if we tried. The other thing I wanted to point out here is merchant fees for online payment processing. This is a growing concern. We talked about it during the hearings in 2015. And these are costs of doing business online. So as we continue to grow out our online adoption, we expect that merchant fees are going to increase. I fear that there's a potential that they could increase to 20% of the corporation division-based budget. And that is just astounding when, you know, we look at, for every dollar that we a customer pays us through an online system, I have to pay 3% of that off to Visa and MasterCard and Discover and American Express, and it just adds up over time. So we'd actually love to come up with a way. We're working with the state CIO and the treasurer's office to create an e-wallet system that would allow us to do debits out of people's checking account if they so choose. That would come with a much lower cost, but we'd like to be able to save that money, put it to better use if we could. But that's just the cost of doing business right now.
Representative Umber?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Interesting note, Mr. Threlkeld, you know that we've expressed some interest in the credit card issue here in the past. One of the things we're learning is that not every agency approaches this challenge the same way. For example, if I pay my individual income taxes with a credit card, I am charged a convenience fee. Or service fee for doing that, and our friends over at ODOT who collect taxes for weight and mile charges have recently made a change in their department. So rather than treating this as a cost of doing business, they are also adding a transaction fee when credit cards are used, and that one change is saving them in the neighborhood of $5 million per biennium. Just to digress for a minute, Mr. Chairman, I found it fascinating in that department, the largest single payment made by an individual using a credit card for weight and mile taxes was $1.9 million. $1.9 million, and the transaction fees on that one transaction was about $40,000. My wife wanted to know who he was. She said she'd leave me in a minute if she could find somebody with a credit portfolio like that. But again, I'm digressing even further. The point being that I think we have some tools to address this particular kind of cost, which across the scope of state government is approaching $1 billion in transaction costs as we use credit cards for everything from paying your taxes to renting a yurt to purchasing publications online.
That's thank you, Representative Gomberg. That is a definite concern that's kind of spreading out. You know, if you're in terms of a smaller user that use a credit card, and then there's a transactional fee that's attached to that as well. So, and this also cross lines into a number of other situations, to include the Department of Corrections, the matter that they're dealing with. Anytime someone that is incarcerated make a certain transaction, they're also assessed with a transaction fee. So is there a plan to deal with that, or is this, I'm really concerned, you know, if you're paying your bill, then you got to pay somebody else in order to pay your bill.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, Representative Gomberg, this really is an area of concern. That's why I brought it up. I think on the one hand, there's a philosophical decision to make. Do we pursue some of those options where we take that fee and we pass it off to the customer and ask them to pay it on top of the fee that they're already paying to the state? Or are there other options that would allow us to get to a lower cost? I used to work in banking for a long time. I managed a cash vault. Banks don't charge people to deposit cash. They don't charge people to deposit checks, and or at least they didn't at the time.
You left banking a long time ago. Try taking in a sack of quarters now.
but I think that we have to find the right balance so that we're not on the one hand punishing our customers or creating a disincentive for them to use online systems, but we also really have a need to try to control those costs as best we can.
Yeah, some people would prefer to just write a check. I don't think that the way you're set up right now, then that would be something that you, would be for the sake of being expedient in processing. That would probably slow things down quite a bit. But the check writer wouldn't lose as much money.
Right.
So, Representative Gomberg.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to extend this longer than necessary, but the increase in cost is one aspect of the conversation. The convenience aspect is another part of it, and it's not just a matter of convenience for the customer, which is certainly important, but also that we have agencies that are spending less time handling checks, processing money. A good example of that is DMV that just switched over to accepting credit cards, and while it's costing them a boatload of money to transact those processes, they are saving the effort of having to handle cash at the end of the day and move that cash from office to office at the end of the week. So there are some trade-offs, and sometimes there are efficiencies that override the actual expense. So You know, I think the answer is that it depends. But the point is that we need to have a conversation and that they and look a little deeper to make sure we're doing things the best possible way.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I wanted to echo your last sentence, or perhaps you folks could work through this a little bit, think of some alternatives and bring them back to us so we could support it. Because obviously you want to take care of the stakeholder, but at the same time you've got this issue out there. So
we would be happy to do that. Okay. On our budget challenges, in business, time is money. Our customers want to use online processes that save them time. When we simplify registration, we reduce barriers to entrepreneurship. Increasing the transparency of public records is efficient, cost-effective. It's also a service that's highly valued by our customers to save them time and money. Also, as more businesses become aware of the services of our small business advocates, more are requesting assistance and increasing our workloads there as we try to cut through red tape. We were asked to present 15% budget reduction options. A 5% reduction would be absorbed through cuts to service and supply, mostly IT professional services, in-state travel, and employee training. It would limit our impacts and our ability to really try to serve the whole state, which we think is important. At 10 to 15% reductions, we're really looking at staff layoffs, elimination of programs, cutting back services, including reducing support for technology services and systems, training and outreach to notaries and business groups throughout the state, and the potential elimination of our call center that's supporting over 8,000 customers a month. I'm not sure where those folks would turn. It might be that they would come to you. Sorry to mention that, but I think they would go somewhere. Just on proposed legislation, House Bill 2348, this is the one that increases the share of business registry revenue to the Secretary of State from $20 to $25. As was noted in Mr. Bender's report that he put together for the committee, our current service level budget is now consuming all of the revenues, all those $20 revenues that are available to the agency. At the same time, business registry fees have increased over the last 20 years from a $20 flat fee up to $50, $100, and $275, depending on what type of business entity you are now. We've contributed, or those fees have contributed, over $300 million to the general fund during that period. At the same time, the Secretary of State has continued to operate out of that $20. We've also reduced 10 FTE. During that time, and our workload has increased 53%. So we think that we've done our part to be efficient and save money and be cost effective, but we've just run to the end of what $20 will buy. House Bill 2352 would provide the division with authority to investigate potential or suspected violations in business filings of corporations and LLCs and their compliance with statute. House Bill 2353 would require corporations and limited liability companies who do not file a tax return with the Oregon Department of Revenue to name their beneficial owners, provide names, addresses, and ID numbers for those beneficial owners and the people that control the company. And for the Secretary of State to make that information available to law enforcement upon subpoena. House Bill 2354 would create a new licensing system for commercial registered agents that are serving as a registered agent for more than 50 businesses. Policy Package 112 supports House Bill 2354. It provides 4 FTE and funding to support the oversight of commercial registered agents. I would note that this law was actually based on a law out of Nevada, and what we learned in the last year that Nevada's law did not protect them from the issues that arose of maybe less than scrupulous registered agents that were involved in the Panama Papers scandal. Mm-hmm. So Nevada had a lot of registered agents, even with this law, that were still providing services to people that were trying to commit money laundering and tax evasion. Policy Package 113 creates a investigative position in the Corporation Division, again, for corporations and limited liability companies, gives us a little bit more authority. It gives the Department of Revenue authority to dissolve the company charter of a business that failed to comply with Oregon tax law. Policy Package 114. This is a hybrid of federal legislation that's pending before Congress to really get at beneficial owners and those that are committing tax evasion and money laundering. Unfortunately, we have to apply it broadly to all corporations and all limited liability companies, but those that don't file a tax return at the entity level with the Department of Revenue would have to provide additional information. And unfortunately, that's almost all limited liability companies, and there's about 170,000 of those today because they're treated mostly as a partnership.
Mr. Co-Chair?
No, I'm sorry. I was just thinking with my hands. I apologize.
Moving along, Policy Package 115, this is revenue impact only. This is the share of funding for the Corporation Division. When we submitted the legislation, or when we submitted the budget request, we didn't have the bill back. And so in your packet, it talks about $3.8 million impact of adding money to the Corporation Division and taking away during the next biennium. Because it's an 18-month implementation, it's actually $2.8 million. When we get into a full biennium, it would be $3.8 million. Getting a little ahead of myself. By contrast, a $1 increase would raise about $560,000 in the next biennium, or $760,000 over a full biennium. If I were to sum up the story of the Corporation Division, it's that we've used technology to make us better, faster, and more efficient. It saves us time while providing a better service to our customers. And I just wanted to leave you with what we've done, transactions per FTE. So in 10 years ago, 2007, our employees were handling about 28,500 transactions a year. Today, they're handling 35,800 transactions a year. So we've reduced staff, taken on more work, and we try to treat them well, but we've given them more efficient processes, more efficient systems, so they're able to do more with less. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Questions from the committee? No questions. I think that was a excellent report. In the words of Senator Johnson.
No, please finish it.
She tossed out a lot, along with the co-chair, tossed out a lot of roses and bouquets, and even some from Representative Gomberg. So I'm okay with that too. So.
I got one more little stray bouquet, and that is, I know it was a joint effort and many hands touched it, but our wonderful blue book has come out. And I don't know about you colleagues, but I find the blue book indispensable. And I know it's online, and I know that frugality would say we only ought to do it that way, but perish the thought that you would ever part company with a published blue book. That is a wonderful, uniquely Oregon treasure and an incredibly useful tool.
Mr. Co-Chairs and Senator Johnson, tomorrow when you hear from the Archives Division, you'll learn that it costs about $50,000 out of pocket to make up the difference because we don't sell enough of them to cover the cost. But it is a part of the heritage and tradition of our state. It's been happening since like 1915. And we're delighted to produce such a wonderful part of history for the state. And by the way, I might mention that one of our largest purchasers is Senator Johnson. And so if you would like to have the option of giving them to your key constituents, let us know.
I give them to libraries in the district. I give them to visiting young people that come down here to be a page, and the libraries just love them. And if you're really nice, the secretary will sign them for you. And so it's a great thing.
Mr. Chairman, with a couple more days to go, I think maybe staff should be asked to alert the local florist to Alberta shortage.
They're run on flowers.
I'm grateful to be over this agency, not some of the other ones.
Mr. Secretary, thank you. Mr. Thrilko, thank you very much. And with that, we will be adjourning for today, and we'll reconvene tomorrow at 1500 hours, 3 o'clock. Or civilians, and we are adjourned.
Mr. Chair, I will be
adjourned.
Mr. Chair, I will be
and we are.